From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of February 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Happy birthday to my brother Larry. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Aaron Hager from the University of Illinois will be here to discuss the new dicamba rules that U.S. EPA put out as a five-year label for dicamba to be sprayed on soybean and cotton, though we'll only take up the soybean regs and really only the tighter restrictions as they're related to the state of Illinois. And we'll talk about the federal restrictions and then what those state of Illinois tighter restrictions look like with Aaron. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and take up the agricultural news for the afternoon as well on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn at 5.53¾ on its settlement price. Finished 2¾ higher today. The May at 5.52½ up to in December. New crop unchanged at $4.69¾. March beans up 22¼, settled at $14.06 even. The November at $12.22 up 10¼. The bean meal at $4.26.50 up $3.40. Bean oil $49.26, $1.36 higher. And wheat futures soft red at $6.65¾ up 1¾. The hard red at 641, 3½ cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished down $1.85. Feeders were down 75 cents, and lean hogs on the day were up $1.30 this afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to talk about the Chicago trade. Hey, Wayne, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, great pleasure to be here.
Well, it looked like soybeans had a good day, but corn futures were a little on a reluctant side. Let's start with the beans first.
Well, the beans, of course, we sort of broke out of our trading range and resistance points out of our pennant chart there last night. And then that really, the funds poured into it. And we're big buyers here, you know, to start the, you know, later in the evening when that happened. And then through most all of the morning, then a little later in the morning, fund buying stopped and we backed up a little bit.
So what triggered it to begin with? I can see the technical side funds pouring in, but fundamentally, was there a trigger that happened?
I think that basically the world veg oil prices have been very good. I mean, we saw the palm oil rally to very strong levels last night. We looked at that. We looked at the crush and how the oils are going. And I think it was, you know, if you were going to look for a fundamental reason, you'd have to say it was the oil market.
Yeah, soybean oil. And then, of course, I assume there's still a delay in harvest in Brazil because of rainfall.
Yeah, I mean, but they're behind quite a bit as far as their harvest goes. We can look a little bit here that with the one possible ruling, it is going to the Supreme Court, if they won't allow the small blenders, so the small refineries to get blenders credits instead, that would make more ethanol or more oil usage or more soy diesel along the way. So that was one of the things that could have been the positive look at for the oils.
On the flip side, corn was reluctant to try to travel along with it. In fact, really did not.
It didn't, and the wheat has weighed so heavily. We sort of run the wheat up on the scares, and when we got our crop ratings last night, they didn't decrease them near as much as what some of the people were looking for as far as the wheat ratings. So that weighed heavily on the wheat, and the wheat, of course, is the other feed grain when you're looking at corn. So that's what held the corn under check.
When you think about new crop, producers have been reluctant because the front dollar sign isn't as high on the new crop as it is on the old crop. I'm wondering if you have concerns about that, given we're headed into the month of March now.
Well, I mean, you know, like it's been a big deal, but the prices we're seeing for new crop corn and beans compared to the last 4 or 5 years is tremendous, and it's going to be very good. But there is great reluctance. I mean, we were looking at $16 November bean calls today. They were trading over 20 cents. So that's, you know, the idea of what might be. And at the money, bean caller put was trading about 90 cents, Todd. So a lot of just people worried whether they go up or down. I mean, you know, it's not leaning one way or the other. It's just leaning, there's volatility out there. You know, some of the big advisory firms priced another 10% of their beans today.
Volatility.
For new crop.
Yeah, for new crop. Volatility reminds me that this is the five-day period in which crop insurance will use volatility from the options, and looks like it might be a big one.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, it's going to be a shock to a lot of guys when they get their quotes for their crop insurance this year. You know, number one, we're insuring many more dollars, probably $100 more an acre. But the volatility factor is what's really going to affect their insurance costs.
So get themselves girded for that one and be ready for it. Crop insurance is due the 15th day of March. Any pre-work you've been doing with them?
I think that, you know, everybody's going to be happy to see the guarantees they have. They're not going to be happy when they look at the extra cost this year, but you know, you're insuring so much more, and at least we're going to be insuring probably at this year, even if you do collect anything, it's going to be a profitable level to go out with, but nobody likes their bills to go up.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the United States Senate has confirmed Joe Biden's pick for U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. Vilsack served as the 30th U.S. Secretary of Agriculture under President Obama and now returns as the 32nd, and that return was not lost on him as he spoke to the Senate on the second day of February about becoming the new nominee.
It's not lost on me, ironically, that this is Groundhog's Day. And I realize that I'm back again, but I also realize that this is a fundamentally different time, and I am a different person, and it is a different department.
And that difference, Vilsack told the Senate panel, starts with COVID.
Clearly, COVID is on the minds of everyone, as it should be. And the Department of Agriculture has a responsibility to aggressively promote the nutrition assistance that you all have provided, and they have begun to do that. We also have to review the additional relief that's been ordered by Congress and try to get that into the hands of farmers, ranchers, producers, and those in rural America as quickly, efficiently, as effectively as possible.
While the former Iowa governor and U.S. Dairy Export Council chief says protection is key.
We need to make sure that our workers are essential workers on the line, in the farm fields, in processing facilities and alike, are protected and recognized as the essential workers they are. And we certainly need to work collaboratively with the Congress and others to build back the rural economy in better shape than it was before the COVID crisis.
Tom Vilsack says COVID has shown many U.S. ag markets lack openness, fairness, competitiveness, and resiliency, which can all be addressed with new rules, laws, marketing programs, and processing plants. Now, we'll stay with the Biden administration, but switch to ethanol, where the Biden administration has handed a major victory to the corn ethanol industry. The EPA says it now agrees with last year's ruling by the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that rejected the Trump EPA retroactive waivers to oil refiners from the renewable fuel standard. The Biden EPA says the 10th Circuit ruling better reflects the law and Congress's intent in establishing the RFS. Ethanol groups that filed suit against the Trump EPA hailed the EPA's reversal under the new administration, which did not file a brief with the Supreme Court by the Monday deadline. Now, small refiners appealed the 10th Circuit ruling, and the Supreme Court agreed to hear the case, though it's unclear what impact the latest development might have on the case going forward. Renewable Fuels Association CEO Jeff Cooper issued a statement calling the announcement a giant step forward to restore the integrity of the RFS. And finally today, experts say farm sector debt is likely to rise again this year. Gary Crawford has more from the United States Department of Agriculture.
The number of farm bankruptcies last year dropped by 7% from 2019, thanks partially to a huge influx of government payments to farmers, which sent farm income overall up from 2019. Although some states did have more bankruptcies, Iowa, for example, recording the largest number of bankruptcies in 10 years. So what can we expect this year nationwide? Well, for one thing,
overall, we're forecasting farm sector income to decrease in 2021.
While expenses increase, an Agriculture Department analyst, Carrie Litkowski, told USDA's Outlook Forum that more farmers will be in more debt.
We think more of their production is going to have to go to making debt payments.
However, according to Nate Kaufman with the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City,
I don't know that it's necessarily clear that we will see an outright increase in bankruptcies as a result of that.
He says the increase in farm income last year may help many struggling producers stay in business this year. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
On that note, a reminder that the winter webinar series that the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, the Farm Doc team, have been hosting for the last several weeks will continue Thursday of this week at 11 a.m. Central Time. They'll be taking up the last financial issues that farmers need to think about before the planting season. It's a recap of the financial position of Illinois farms, and they'll go over budgeting and pro forma cash flow planning for 2021. Krista Swanson, Dale Latz, and Gary Schnitke will be there. You should be as well. You can sign up for free at WILLAG.org, WILLAG.org. Look for the Farm Doc Daily Winter Meeting Series. This week, the last financial issues before planting. U.S. EPA has issued rules allowing dicamba to be used on soybeans again this season. The state of Illinois has some additional application restrictions. These extra restrictions for dicamba used on soybean in the state are nearly identical to those from last season, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager.
Very similar to last year, there will be a temperature restriction on the product labels. And the restriction will indicate that these dicamba-containing products cannot be applied to soybean if the actual air temperature at the field at the time of application is over 85 degrees, or if the National Weather Service forecasted temperature for the nearest available location for the day of application exceeds 85 degrees. And the other significant change and difference between the states and federal labels is that Illinois will again restrict applications of these dicamba-containing products on soybean to June 20th.
The federal application restriction is to June 30, but again, the Illinois rules do not allow for dicamba application on soybean after June 20. Hager reminds farmers and applicators that they'll also need to be aware of adjacent properties before spraying. Applications cannot be made if the wind is blowing toward residential areas or natural preserves. They'll also need to consult the endangered species website. The URL's on the product label. Counties with endangered species have different downwind buffers. Those counties have changed from last year. And new this year is that the only crop allowed downwind in those counties is dicamba soybean.
So in other words, if you had a corn field that you would like to count in your downwind buffer calculation in endangered species counties, you cannot do that.
U.S. EPA's dicamba herbicide on soybean application restrictions was issued as a five-year federal label. States have the authority to impose tighter restrictions through a federal process. Well, this is the last week that USDA will use to set federal crop insurance prices for corn and soybeans. That comes off the November and December contracts in Chicago. And volatility plays a big role in what those prices will be and in what those crop insurance prices will look like. About a month ago, I talked with Gary Schnitke about the crop insurance decision tool and how farmers can use it to figure premiums. So leave that in the back of your mind as he's discussing what these premiums look like. I think the volatility will be greater than what he was anticipating at that time. But it will give you an idea of how you should view ECO as it relates to crop insurance. And one of the spreadsheets that you can download from the FarmDoc website, just search FarmDoc and crop insurance and you'll find the decision tool that you can use on your own to help figure premiums and get an idea of where you want to set crop insurance for this year. I asked Gary about it and what that crop insurance decision tool was like.
Yeah, so the biggest changes are that we added ECO to our tool. Our premium calculator will give you premiums for RP, YP, ARP and the area yield plans, but we added ECO this year so that you can look at the combinations of taking RP or another combo product and combining that with SCO and ECO.
All right, so it uses the enhanced coverage option as well. So let's walk through this. First, is it online or downloadable?
So this is a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, so it's downloadable. And you download it. It's a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. You put in your county and crop, and then it will bring in some defaults that are pretty close to the yields that are representative of that county, and you'll get premiums. You can dial it in closer if you want to. But the thing that is new this year is obviously ECO. And just let me give you a feel for what that means. In LaSalle County, which is our example, we have an $18.70 premium for RP 85% at the enterprise level. You can take that 85% and add SCO, which will give you a county level coverage from 85 to 86%, only 1% increase there, for 76 cents per acre. You can get county level coverage from 86% up to 90%. So if you wanted to, you could have your 85% RP policy and then get a band of county coverage. On top of that, you would buy ECO and SCO, and that would cost you, the ECO portion of that for the 90% would cost you $8.02, and plus the 76 cents for SCO, and you're close to $8.80 for that coverage from 85% to 90, that county band.
You've done some work on the return on, I'll call it ROI here, return on investment, but is it something that producers are likely to be able to take advantage of or that will trigger if crop insurance is triggered?
Yeah, so those policies, those 90 in particular, there you also have the 95% coverage level. Over time, those ECOs will tend to pay out more than they pay in, but there will be many years when it doesn't pay at all. So you really do have to look at the premium. And so let's take that 90% coverage level. You for that extra band, you're raising your premium from 1870 to 2748. Is that a expense that you want to have? And you know, in for roughly 40% of the time, that ECO band's going to trigger. So that'll give you a feel.
What about the supplemental coverage option?
So the supplemental coverage option takes you from 85 to 86. That's at 76 in that 85%. ECO then takes you from 86% to 90%. That's that 802. You could also use ECO to take you from 86 to 95%. And that, in this county's case, would cost $24.04. So you would more than double the premium.
So what are you suggesting to producers, not on what they should purchase, but how they should use this crop insurance or premium calculator?
Yeah, so most people are at the 80 and 85% coverage level in northern and central Illinois. I would not lower that RP coverage level much, but if you want to, you can get an extra band above that. This year might be a reasonably good year to do that because we're probably going to be setting some pretty high projected prices. So provide you some pretty large coverage, pretty high coverage. So I would not lower my RP policy, but I might add that 90 or 95% band. And you just have to look at that premium and make that decision.
That's a conversation I had with Gary Schnitke about a month ago related to some of the decision tools that you can find on the FarmDoc website for crop insurance. Just search crop insurance and FarmDoc. You'll find a link to them. Should be the first one that comes up. The crop insurance decision needs to be made by the 15th day of March, and we're in the final week of setting the premium prices. That's why if you go in today and look, they'll probably be higher than what Gary and I were discussing a month ago. Volatility and price both have an impact on what those crop insurance premiums look like. The calculators, again, online. Search FarmDoc and crop insurance. And then remember that this webinar series I've been hosting with the Ag Economist will focus on crop insurance again, not this Thursday. I already talked about this Thursday, but on the fourth day of March, next Thursday, the following one, we'll take up crop insurance and those final decisions. So you'll want to join us. Make sure that you get yourself registered. You can just scroll down, find the registration link. If you're registered for one, you're registered for all. It's free. It's a webinar and it's online. The FarmDoc Winter Webinar Series. Get yourself registered today. The links are at willag.org, willag.org. On this Tuesday, let's check the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us today. I'd like to stay here in the United States, begin in Texas, and kind of work our way to the north and back to the east. They had a really rough week. Actually, much of the middle part of the country did. Last week, very, very cold. You explained it as the Arctic air is kind of like molasses and it doesn't move very quickly. Feels like it's starting to move. What do you see?
Yeah, we had to wait until we saw the jet stream straighten out, meaning having the upper level winds move more west to east across the nation, because a week ago when we talked, they were going almost 90 degrees opposite, coming out of the polar regions and heading south. But that change in the upper level wind direction has helped push away the Arctic air out of the nation's midsection, thin it out a little bit, and is bringing big relief to the areas that were in the deep freeze. And that includes a lot of the Corn Belt in the Midwest as well. So enjoying a warm up across the U.S., it doesn't mean we're done with cold outbreaks. I think we've certainly, winter looks like it has more up its sleeve as we get into late February and March. But at least here as we go through the week, a big relief from the cold.
Did that Arctic air pool somewhere northward of us where it might spill back down into the United States?
Well, there is a lot of cold air stuck up in those higher latitudes. In fact, spinning up over northern Hudson Bay and parts of Greenland right now is a very intensely cold Arctic air mass that is not unusual for this time of February to still be there. And so as long as we see that up there, and we will see it into early March, there is going to be the risk for more cold intrusions. Now, will these cold intrusions be as intense as what we just experienced? The answer would be no. That's really hard to do. But I think more shots of colder than normal temperatures for the nation's midsection, for the Corn Belt, and even the Deep South could still happen this winter.
Oh, surprised me with the Deep South. Are we talking the Southeast instead of the Southwest this time around?
Well, that's a little bit too hard to discern. But I will tell you that a lot of times when we see patterns like this that we've experienced, if we go back to 2011, if we go back to 1983 when these Arctic outbreaks occurred before, sometimes they'll hit the same areas as the previous ones did. Not exactly, but there does tend to be a tendency for the pattern to repeat itself.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.